Welcome, everybody, to episode 105 to the Game Store Profits Podcast. My name is Mike Perna.
And as of this week, I am Jeff Romo.
As of this week?
Yeah.
Who were you beforehand?
Identity Crisis, you know, Shadowrun, car chases, too many NPCs to count. Yeah. It's my usual story this time of week.
Oh, the joys of being a DM.
That's right.
Well, for those of you who might be new to the podcast, this is a podcast where two guys talk about, you know, God and games and how these things do not live in isolated, opposite worlds. They actually come together quite nicely.
Quite nicely, in fact.
Without going into all the other stuff that we're going to get into, because this is going to be a packed episode, guys. I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to speak at a higher cadence just so I can talk faster. So, here we go!
But before we get into any of that, Jeff, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I dove into a couple of things over the weekend. One is RPG, which I think over the last couple episodes, everybody kind of knows I have my regular Sunday night Shadowrun. That was all sorts of crazy waffle awesome. And then I got a chance to dive into some Stone Age, a nice little resource allocation worker thingamajiggy. That was pretty awesome. But
Stone Age, give a short little bit about Stone Age, because it is one of those games that a lot of gamers are going to know about, because it was pretty much one of the granddaddies of worker placement. But I know that it's also one that, unless you're into the hobby, you might not have stumbled across. So give people a little bit about what that game's like.
Sure enough, let me give you a little taste. So Stone Age places you into the Stone Age, and you are basically in control of a group of workers that is responsible for picking up resources like wood, stone, creating tools where you put heavy stone onto wood and then create things with tools, anything from boats to huts, that sort of thing. You got to feed your meeples, so they're out there gathering resources, whether they're hunter-gathering. I kind of merged that word together. Again, saving time, kids. We got a lot to get through. then there's the wonderful baby-making factory that is there as well, so that if you need to get more workers, then naturally you need more hands, and naturally that takes some doing. So, yeah, so it depends on the strategy you go with. I went with a strategy of producing more workers, then going for the cheap stuff, which is the wood rather than the stone or the clay, and then basically hunter-gathering and building my way to second place in the game, which wasn't too bad. But you go through rounds. Each round you place your workers. They do their thing, whether it's resource gathering, hunting. Then you start taking those materials and then building what you can. You find one allocation of resource and say, okay, I need a piece of wood and I need a brick of stone or a brick of clay in order to fill this particular item, like a hut or a boat, or perhaps coming up with music. You never know. And whoever ends up with the most points that comes from having meeples and having resources and having all of these things you've created, they win. I think that it's kind of interesting that there's not really a max point, because one of the guys that won actually looped the scoreboard. So if you've ever seen a board with the points that go all the way around the outside and leads up to about 100, he got like 140. He like went rampant. He had like one multiplier at the end that just killed everybody. I thought I was going to make it, but then he just totally blew past me. But yeah, so it's the end of the game is actually called when one of the creation decks goes empty. And I think there's like four decks, if our memory serves correctly, because we played early Saturday morning and I forgot some of it because it was too early. But Stone Age, lots of fun, very accessible. Even for a simpleton like me, it only took about 30 minutes to pick up on it. And that was 15 minutes of explanation and 15 minutes of actual game time. Not too shabby.
Well, I will say that Stone Age, like I said, is one of those ones that kind of established what it means to be a worker placement game. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I've never played it. I can tell you the entire complement of the rules. I can tell you what the board looks like. I can tell you what it's meant to the industry. I've never played it. So
It's a lot of fun. It's to the point that I'm thinking that it would be kind of cool to get that, and then maybe the expansion. I think they had one that it originally came out in 08, but then the expansion came out in like 2011 or something like that. So yeah, it looks pretty cool. Or it was a lot of fun, but the expansion looks pretty cool too.
Was there anything else you've been playing?
Shadowrun. We're having our 1E game. Had a lot of fun. I'm doing, and if you guys are listening, if you're in my game and you're listening, just turn off the podcast for like right now. But I'm basically taking them through a classic module called Dream Chipper, and I'm interweaving it with the larger story arc that they have right now. So I'm just kind of taking some elements, replacing some characters here and there. But they're on the free raid route now at night, which is a terrible thing to do in the year 2050 in the Seattle proper, and they're heading towards the Redmond Barrens. So needless to say, I cliffhanger them on a rainy night on the freeway where darkness ruled, and all they hear are the rumble of motorcycles behind them. So that basically means trouble.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I guess we can kind of segue into this. I can say that I'm definitely going to be a voice featured on the Gamers Table actual play of Shadowrun.
Right. That's right.
You know, part of me wants to say who I am, but I'm actually going to do this. I don't know if I'm going to give away anything because I don't have anything left to give away. I gave all of it away at TavernCon. But you know, actually I do. I've got stickers and magnets. If you can successfully identify the first person to email me, mike@inroadsministries.com, when that thing goes live, and I have no idea when it's going live, so I might be saying this next podcast as well. But the first person to email me at mike@inroadsministries.com after hearing the Gamers Table actual play and can successfully identify which voice is mine, I will send you our stickers and magnet from the TavernCon event. The part they gave me is short, and I had to put on a lot of effect into my voice because
No.
this character does not sound like me. Or at least I hope this character doesn't sound like me.
So wait, is it, just to give a little hint, is it natural effects or is it actual special effects?
I don't want to give anything away.
Okay,
If I'm actually going to be like mailing out like prizes, I don't want to give any hints.
sorry kids, I tried. I totally tried.
But yes, if that hasn't gone live on their site by the time we hit our next podcast, I'll say that again. But be listening, be checking out their site. I can't wait because Gen Con's coming up, and I now like have made contact with several of the people at Gamers Table, and I want to meet them because many of them, if not all of them, will be there at Gen Con this year.
Yep.
So hopefully that will be awesome. As it stands, with Gen Con on the horizon, I'm still getting over Tavern Con.
Oh, that's right. There was that little thing that went on right by your house.
There was that little event that went on right in our backyard.
Oh, so cool. Come on, tell us a little bit. I know you had the bonus content, and that was super awesome.
I have the bonus content where you're basically
Yeah.
hearing a very groggy, very worn out version
You're
of me.
so tired, man.
Oh, dude, I was recording that. I recorded it before I went to church,
Yeah.
and I think I might have just woken up maybe like 20 minutes earlier,
Yeah.
and yeah, it definitely shows in that recording. But the short version is that this event literally met or exceeded every expectation I had. I set the expectations fairly low just because I've been running events most of my natural life, and I know that the first time you run something like this. Now, technically, we have run events in the past, but they've always been in support of other things. It's been through Extra Life or other charities. So this was the first of our events.
Yeah, this one, headliner.
So I was setting the expectations fairly low, but we kicked it out. We raised a bunch of money. I now have a, like I said, I don't want to, completely make that podcast before just obsolete, but real quick, met a lot of awesome people, connected with Jason Tagmeyer, who is a great designer who brought a lot of his awesome games, and we even got, it's still penciled in yet, we haven't got the official date, but a local church is going to have an Inroads game day probably beginning of next year.
Very cool.
So The event was awesome, and I got to play not as much as I wanted to because, you know, they never explain to you when you're running these events that you can't actually spend the entire time playing games.
No.
You actually have to like do work and make sure things are happening the way they're supposed to.
Well, Mike Perna, then that officially seals it. Then you're gonna have to fly out here, run the En-ROADS event so that I can play.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'll get right on that. But what I can say is I was able to, every once in a while, I just said, you know, I've been wandering around, I've been checking on people enough, I'm going to sit down and play a game. So I did get to play some. I had to play two games that I have played a lot and are in the upper echelon of my favorites in the collection. And I also got to play a brand new game. So I will start off with the games I've played before. I got to play Spectre Ops, and
Always, always a fan favorite.
I got to play as a hunter, and I got to play as a hunter that I'd never played before, which is the Beast. And the Beast, his thing in this game, he is trying to literally sniff out the agent. So his special ability, before I get into his special ability, we've talked about Spectre Ops before, so I'm not going to go into the whole thing. But the short version is that this is a one versus many kind of game where one person is playing as a secret agent trying to go through and cause chaos and generally steal some information from this corporation, and the rest of the players are playing as hunters trying to hunt down and kill the agent before they're able to do what they do. The Beast is cool because one of the Beast's abilities is called Natural Senses. And basically what that means is if you don't do your full move, if you do either I believe it's three or less movement squares, you can do what's called your natural senses. And basically what it says is if the agent is within 4 squares of your position, it doesn't matter if you can see them or not, but if they're within 4 squares of you, they have to say that they're within 4 squares of you. And it usually ends up with me saying, "Can I smell you?" And it was great because there was one time where my buddy was playing as the agent, and he goes, it was a really tense moment because it was towards the end. He had finished his objectives and he was literally running for the exit, and I was standing right by the exit. And I said, "Can I smell you?" And he goes, "Yes, you can." And all of us went nuts. Sadly, he did end up getting out the door before we could corner him. But man, I love that game so much. I like the Beast a lot. I don't know if he'll dethrone the Prophet as my favorite hunter, because the Prophet has a lot of tools in his tool bag to make things really annoying for the agent. But the Beast is definitely a solid, solid hunter. I also got to play Doomtown.
You've been hankering for it, man.
I have been. Oh, I have been. I will say that not only did I get to play Doomtown, I got to do a little exploration in Doomtown because I'd only ever played Doomtown one-on-one. However, the game plays up to 4 players. We didn't get a full game of four, but we did play with three. There were two people who wanted to learn, and so rather than just have one person stand around watching, I just said, let's play a game of three. And I will tell you that playing it with three people or more is a completely different experience. It tweaks your strategy.
Right,
Be
because you're having to adapt to two different personalities along
well,
with.
well, not only that, but the game is essentially just making sure that you have people in the right places to defend your deeds and to make sure that they can back up each other in fights. Well, in a two-player game, you can just go all in. You'd be like, all right, you're going to be in the town square. You're going to go to this deed. You're going to try and take this. And you can be much more aggressive. Now, you can't be too aggressive because one bad shootout and you've lost the game. But you can be more on the aggressive side when you're playing with two people. If you're playing with three people, if you go all in and try to take out another player, before you know it, all your guys are on the other side of town, and the third player just walks in and takes all your stuff. So it's really easy to get backdoored if you have multiple players. So that was fun. But without doubt, the king of the event for me was Spyfall.
Yeah. I was wondering, I saw the post on Facebook when you're like, okay, it's time. And there's just this cover of Spyfall right there. I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to hear about.
I love this game. I love it so much. The short version of how the play the rules, which I don't even think I can call it a short version because the rules are not complicated.
Mm-mm, not at all.
You can play with up to 8 people. And what happens is that you have a pack of cards that is 7 copies of a location. It's all the same location. The only difference from card to card is that it also gives you what your job is at that location. Like, I'll give you an example. One of the times we played, we were on a movie set, and I was an extra on the movie set. So there are 7 people with locations and jobs. The 8th person is the spy. And the spy has nothing on his card but the fact that he is the spy. So then you start asking these vague questions of the other players around you. Things like, do you find it particularly warm at your location? Do you see a lot of children there? One of my favorite ones was somebody asked me, with that one where I was the extra on the movie set, they're like, do you have any particular authority in your job? And I said, no. I show up, they tell me what to do, I go home. But the way the game works is if you're one of the people that is at the location, your goal is to determine, based on the answers, who the spy is. And at any point, one of the people with the locations can call for a vote. They'll say who they think the spy is. And if it's a unanimous vote, that player has to flip over their card to reveal whether they're the spy or not.
Right.
I will say that both games, I was not the spy. Both games, I was one of these people. One game, we actually identified the spy successfully. The other game, I'm the one who called for the vote. And it was the wrong person.
So what does that do to you when you pick the wrong person?
Well, basically what happens is that the game does have scoring. In typical party game fashion, the game has scoring based on what happens and who picks what. But even the rules as written say, play until you're done. Play until you want to stop. Person with the most points wins.
Right.
If you're the spy, however, your goal is slightly different than the other players because the spy is trying to figure out where he is. The spy is basically going to try and ask these questions of people, not tipping off the fact that he has no idea where you are, but is trying to identify where the location is. And at any point, if the spy is confident that they have the location down, they can reveal themselves as a spy and guess the location. If they're right, they get 4 points. If not, everyone else gets 1. I will tell you, this game is amazing. This game, it's super simple. It's not a complex game at all. But the way it makes people act and the way it makes you think, because, again, you can't reveal. If you're too obvious and too blatant with your responses or even your questions, the spy's going to know where you are.
All right.
So you can't just, like, you know, pin somebody to the wall and ask a tough question that's obvious, because then the spy is going to win. So the entire game is dancing around the issue. It's dancing around, like, how do I ask this question without being too obvious? And so you have these moments of, even if you have the location card, even if you know what your job is and where you are, there's still that moment of, I have to be vague enough that I don't give this away. And so the spy might look shifty as all get out, but everyone is looking shifty as all get out. This is not, it's not limited to the spy.
Everybody is guilty.
And so you just have these amazing, amazing moments. But I do think that the best part is not actually the game itself, but the reaction after.
Right.
Like, the game itself is funny and haha and tense and crazy. it does have those positive moments, but the best part is when you flip over the cards at the end and you go, "Oh, that makes sense. Oh, I can't believe you answered that question like that." And it's funny too because you're trying to like all the while like look at the other players and be like, "Did that answer, was that a screw up or was it intentionally a screw up?" Or
So
it's
what was like the average game time? Like, were you able to get a couple rounds in when you played,
oh,
or?
I was able to. Because it was TavernCon, because it was the event, I limited to myself to no more than 45 minutes of sitting down to one game.
Right.
Because I needed to be mobile. I needed to move and connect with people and make sure the volunteers were where they needed to be.
Right.
In that time, we got in 3 rounds of Spyfall.
That's cool. I was really curious if it was going to live up to that whole, because it's claiming like, 15, 20 minutes roughly with an average player set of five to six, I think it was what I was reading. I
The
think I know
only
it goes up
thing
to eight, but
I will say, just as a slight kind of, I mean, because no game is perfect, so I want to make sure that I clarify this.
Right.
The only thing I would say is that I don't want to use the term analysis paralysis because it's not exactly what happens, but there were a couple of times when it was either somebody's turn to, when it was somebody's turn to ask a question, and they hadn't been thinking of the question,
Yeah.
and so they just kind of like their eyes kind of glazed over, and they're just kind of just staring off into the middle distance, trying to figure out what's the good question to ask.
Right.
So there is that thing that if you're not paying attention, if you're not thinking ahead, you have those downtimes of, all right, this person's going to take another 3 minutes before they come up with a good question.
Now, do they have like a built-in timing mechanic or an alternate rule for timing mechanics on it?
No, it allows for the fact that if you want to set a time, in fact, it actually recommends like having a stopwatch with you.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be kind of cool to have like a little mini sand, sand hourglass or whatever to kind of do
Yeah, no,
that.
they definitely allow for that. So that
That's
would
cool.
right there, that would take away that because either the person's gonna be quicker on the draw, or you're just gonna move on to the next person if the time runs out. So that allows for some speed to be kind of built in. But no, this game had a ton of hype.
Right.
And whenever a game has a ton of hype, I always get a little bit leery. Like, come on, it can't actually be that good.
Right.
Like, no game is that good.
And for frame of reference, we can always refer back a couple episodes to our new hotness discussion.
Right, exactly. But I will tell you that Spyfall is worth the hype. Everything people are saying about it, it's true. It is a ton of fun. It's not an expensive game. It's a simple game.
Yeah.
There are 30 different locations. So even if you were to sit down and play nothing but Spyfall for quite a while, you still have a ton of possibilities for the
That's good.
game.
That's good.
So yeah, no, it is a solid game. It's super light but super fun. Yeah, it's worth all the hype.
Yeah, I asked about the timing mainly because there was like an interesting development at my job site this week.
Okay.
And now there's one guy I know for all the followers at En-ROADS, there's kind of when we first began the ministry, when Mike and Luke were, organizing everything together, and then Basha and myself joined up. There was a fifth person that came along to kind of help a little bit with some of the really super technical stuff in the computer world. And his name is well, I'll leave him out for now. He works at my place of business. And so I already knew he was like a big time mega geek. He's like me and him, we like trade trivia on Star Wars and stuff all the time. In fact, he got a chance to go to the Star Wars panel and I completely hate him for it. But beside that hatred, he's a real great guy. But I found out there's like two other people there that are also heavily into geekdom. And I've been working there for 7 to 8 years and didn't even know they were right next door to me. So I've been kind of tossed around the idea of different games to bring to work to have, because we can take like upwards of an hour for lunch. So I was thinking, oh, it'd be kind of cool to have like maybe once a week have like a game lunch. And then, yeah, I was reading about Spyfall. You got me all hyped up about it. Thanks a lot, Perna. And I was thinking, man, you know, like a 15, like 30-minute, you know, hot shot game, you know, just to kind of throw in there. This one totally fits the bill. And I was really curious, like, your impressions to it and if it would make it. And I think it does. I think it fits the bill perfectly.
Oh, it's solid. It's definitely a great experience. And like I said, if for something like a lunch break where there are set get there and get out time frames, it's great because, you know, even if you don't get as many rounds in as you'd want, you can just get in and get out and you're not like worried about a huge board setup or what. You basically count up points whenever you finish, so you're good.
Yeah, totally. So like if something comes up, we can like, all right, we got to end the game, let's move on. Yeah, so that was kind of a thing that started at my job too, and that's when Spyfall kind of came into my head. But yeah, it definitely got me thinking about, you know, the different places that we can share what we do here at En-ROADS. You know, something as close as a couple folks in the cubicle right next door to me. You know, I could have been, hey, let's talk about nerd stuff, and didn't even get a chance to do that all this time. I'm just kind of glad the situation arose where I could learn about that and then, you know, just get closer to him, which is really cool. But, you know, it got me thinking before the podcast, we talked about a little bit about how we, you know, in this ministry, the great tool that we have at our disposal, games, is such an awesome connection. And we can take that connection, you know, whatever size game it is, we could take that connection on the road. You know, you got your big road trip coming up here in the next couple weeks, or maybe in
Yeah,
about a
Gen
week.
Con.
Yeah, so I was thinking of Acts 1, you know, 6 through 8, talking about going from Jerusalem to the Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And while Gen Con's not the ends of the earth, it's pretty darn far from you. And you're getting into spreading the word there. It's pretty awesome.
It's especially considered the ends of the earth when I'm driving. This year I'm actually flying, so it's not as bad,
There
but
you go.
12-hour drive one way is not pleasant.
That's pretty immense, yeah. So it's I don't know, it got me thinking about that. And then kind of going further out, our church is bringing up the discussion of heading over to the South Pacific. I can't go into specifics about where it is just for the people that are on the ground there, but it came to mind that I was thinking, you know what, we're going there for a, how do I keep this general so that there's no specifics out there? We're going there for kind of like an educational trip to, you know, bridge the gap and to, you know, meet people where they're at and not say, hey, you need to change and look like me so that we can talk about Jesus. No, it's about going in there, showing them love, meeting them where they're at. And I'm thinking of all the different tools that I have in my tool belt. And I'm like, okay, I'm a woodworker. I can do some other things. I'm a great project manager, so I can help out with coordination. And then I was thinking, games, 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 games. What can I bring with me that's handy that I can work with the translators really quick to kind of lay it out for those who may not speak English or speak a particular dialect of Tagalog that I know. What can I do? And so I actually threw the question out to you not too much before we started recording, but you already came up with some ideas of games that I could bring, like Corkle or some others. What were some of the other games that you mentioned?
Well, I have this ability because, you know, I spend a lot of time on various board gaming sites and watching videos and talking to people because, I don't know, it's like we have this ministry or something. In fact, earlier today, somebody's like, I need 2-player games I can play with my wife. And I said, here's 7 I can think of right off the top of my head. So when you said, I kind of broke down what you just kind of said there, and it kind of broke it down into a couple specific kind of elements because you can bring a lot of games with you. I mean, especially nowadays, the number of games that you can travel with is huge. But you specifically wanted something that you can carry with you really light, so like something that you can fit in a knapsack.
Yep, because I'll definitely be using a knapsack where I'm going. There'll be some hiking and some leave the car behind the last 10 miles of the stretch to the destination. So, yeah, something portable.
Something that was simple. So you didn't have to spend your whole time explaining rules. and something that it didn't complicate things if there was a language barrier.
Right.
So I came up with a handful. And you mentioned Quirkle. Quirkle is great. You can literally shove it in a little baggie if you need to, because it's primarily just a bunch of tiles with shapes and colors.
Yeah.
And all you need to do, you make lines of color or shape. So the game basically breaks down to, can you match colors and shapes?
Yes.
It's a ton of fun. In fact, it was not that long ago. I can't remember what season it was, but on tabletop they featured Quirkle as a nice small game. It's super simple, but at the same point, when it actually starts playing out, you really have to be observing, and there are those moments where you're like, oh my goodness, I totally didn't see that move. So it's a lot of fun, and if somebody is particularly observant and can find where to stick those tiny tiles that, you know, you wouldn't think to play certain things, you can score huge points, and it's a ton of fun.
Right.
Another one that involves manipulating tiles is a game called Blockus.
Dad, I think I've kind of heard of this one. Okay, go.
Blockus has been around for a while.
Yeah.
And each person has, like, almost think of them like Tetris shapes. Mm-hmm. Like, they're blocks almost like Tetris shapes. And there's a grid, like a grid board. It's not big, it's a tiny little board. And each player takes turns placing their pieces on the grid. The only issue is that every time you place a tile down, it has to be touching one of your previous tiles. Now, you'd think that that seems easy, but then you realize this isn't a large grid. This isn't a big board. And especially if you're playing with four people,
you run out of room quick.
That thing gets crowded.
Yeah.
And it becomes harder and harder to take some of the bigger, more complicated looking pieces and finding a spot for it.
Yeah.
So it's super simple, because like I said, all you're doing is on your turn, you place one of your tiles. That's how it goes. But at the same point, it provides a lot of interesting moments. It provides an opportunity just to figure out when to place what. So there's a bit of strategy there. Mm-hmm. It's a real simple game, but it's a ton of fun. And it shapes. Again, it shapes.
There's not a lot of translation to go on there. It's just, you know, helping them work out, okay, here's how you do the strategy, here's your moves, and let's do it.
Exactly. Yeah. The other two aren't as language barrier friendly as the first two I thought of, but it's not a big deal. I actually got this one game. I got it randomly because when Barnes & Noble was doing their 50% off clearance sale on games, I didn't have any money, but when you say 50% off on games, I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, that'll get me through the door.
Right, so I did walk in. I controlled myself, which was something that made my wife very happy. But I couldn't leave completely empty-handed. There was something in me that said, you need to get something.
You're here for a reason.
I came all the way down here.
What a waste.
Yeah, I want to leave with something.
Yeah.
So I ended up picking up a copy of a game that I'd heard of a lot, but had never played. It's a little drafting game called Sushi Go.
Yeah.
Sushi Go is in this little tin, and it's basically a deck of cards. And it's a drafting game. You have a set of cards in your hand, you pick one, and you pass the rest to the other player. The cards then go around, and you... That's it. That's basically the mechanic. It is the purest form of the drafting mechanic that you're ever going to find, because that's the entirety of the game. The way it works, though, is that the reason you pick certain cards will impact the points that you score. Like, there are cards like dumplings. Like, the more dumplings you have, the more points each dumpling is worth.
Is this the one where, like, wasabi's, like, triple points or something like that? Like, you get a great dip, and you're like, bam!
This is, in fact, when you have things like wasabi, which multiplies points, chopsticks that multiply
Got it.
points and stuff like that. So you're trying to figure out when to play what. There are cards like puddings that don't come until the very end of the game. There's all sorts of stuff, but really, all the cards are pictures of sushi. That's all they are. Now, granted, the reason I said it's not as language-friendly is because they do have, obviously, my copy's in English. They do have the instructions of how many points this is worth in English on the bottom.
Right.
So, but really, 3 seconds of translation.
Yeah, no, they're using regular numbers over there, so that's not going to be, that won't be a problem at all.
Yeah, it's a quick game. It's a great game. I will tell you what, you know, I had a bunch of great stuff when we had people bringing in all sorts of other stuff too, like stuff that I don't have. Like the Magic the Gathering strategy game was played, and oh my goodness, that thing looks intense.
It does. I've seen YouTubes on that. It looks like almost fight warranting. But anyway, let's move on. Go ahead.
So we had all these crazy games that people have been dying for. Bar none, the game that I saw played by more people than any other was Sushi Go.
Nice.
So this little game was seeing more table time than the big ticket stuff. So take that for what it is.
Yeah, and it's fast-paced, too. I mean, I think it's like a 15-20-minute game, but it's like super fast-paced from what I remember hearing about it. I just remember every time I go to sushi, and it stuck in my head because of that little review I read about Sushi Go. Whenever I go out and have sushi, I always see wasabi, and I think triple points. Triple points. And I've never even played the stinking game, Perna, and I'm thinking triple points. Whatever. There's my brain.
Yeah, no.
So what's the fourth game? Fourth game.
The fourth game is one that I will say that you need to have at least somebody who can translate.
Perfect.
Because there are some things written down on cards. Like you get characters that have special abilities, and if you don't have somebody to translate those special abilities, you'll lose something in the game.
Got it.
However, I will recommend a little game called Dungeon Roll.
Hmm.
Dungeon Roll is a dice game, and it fits in this tiny little treasure chest. I was actually part of the Kickstarter, so mine looks like a mimic. So that's
nice.
Awesome. But Dungeon Roll, you just have a set of dice. There are a set of hero dice and a set of monster dice. And it is a push-your-luck dice game. So the very first thing you do is you roll all your hero dice. And you see what the faces on these are, things like your typical, or should I say archetypal, heroes. There's fighters, wizards, thieves, and clerics. There's also just hero, like the absolute epitome of all things hero. What you realize is that every turn you start off and you only roll one monster die. It's level one, you roll one. And your hero dice, you actually use the hero dice to combat that monster. So you basically take, like, I don't have the card in front of me, the little reference card, but let's just say cleric will kill all the skeletons that you rolled. So even if you've rolled like four monster dice, if four of them are skeletons, boom, cleric kills all of them. Got so it. It's a push your luck game, because every level of the dungeon you go deeper, more dice get rolled. If you push your luck to the point where you've rolled more dice than you have heroes to combat those dice, game over, or at least that round is over, and you have no points for that round. You have to give away, you have to give back everything you got, and you're pretty much just done for that round. There's all sorts of other little complicated things you can throw in there, like there are dragons, and if you collect three dragons, you have to fight the dragon. And the dragon has, you have to get specific things in order to deal with the dragon, otherwise the dragon eats you. And like I said, each person playing has a character. The last time I ended up playing, I played the dwarf, who kind of has a berserk special ability. So there are
nice
little things that you do need to have somebody who can translate to say, oh, this means this. But other than the character options, and maybe some of the little items that you pick up, it's literally on a grid that says this kills all of these, this kills all of these, this kills all of these, and then.
So it kind of patterns out your victory scenario, right. Or your, yeah, like on any given encounter.
Again,
kind of
it is
that's
the,
cool.
The dice themselves are all symbols, so you don't right. need to understand a certain language to understand the symbols on the dice. So after a couple seconds of translating the hero card, you're good.
That one looks pretty good. I'd have to be a little wary of the pictures just because of the location where we're going to. But there are other areas that are in and around the place where they're a little more progressive. So this actually might be a cool option just for some of the more imaginative kids that we'll be dealing with.
Yeah, and the other cool, three, man. There's literally nothing I could think of that would cause any problems.
No, and you know what's really great about those is, like, especially something like Quirkle or Blackus is the idea of you can totally, like, just encourage people, like, oh my gosh, I never saw that move coming, or man, way to go, that was just super awesome, I can't believe you did that. So, I mean, it's a great little opportunity to have some competition, but really turn that competition into encouragement. And just, you know, just well, loving and, on the people. So
that's and a, in all honesty, cool. There's one that I didn't even think of until just now. That who was it? I believe it was Quinn's from Shut Up and Sit Down was talking about the fact that he was on a trip. He was on a trip overseas, and he didn't know how to speak the language, and there was no translator. Mm. But he ended up playing Liar's Dice.
Oh,
you just need a set of dice for that. And he was able to successfully do that without a translator.
That game I am familiar with.
Games have the ability to bridge that gap. I mean, we always say that, but when you're dealing with mission work, you're talking about literally being able to bridge that gap.
Yeah, and it's totally about just, you don't necessarily have to be a specialist. It helps sometimes, but at the same time, it's just bring your tool belt, man. Bring your tool belt, whatever you got, you know the Lord's going to use. So just fill up your tools, fill it up with what your heart is in because of the Lord, and bam,
well,
it's just going
to
get
used.
Let me
throw this out to you then as kind of a question as we move into this last part of the podcast. It wasn't that long ago that I wrote an article for what I refer to as the Abbey, which is the, you know, normally our articles are broad spectrum. I mean, we don't hide the fact that we're a Christian organization, but you don't have to be a Christian to appreciate what we're saying. The Abbey is specifically pointed to this is how you use games in ministry. So we don't have a lot of articles there yet, but we have a couple. And one of the ones that I put out fairly early, I titled Not Just Another Game Night. Because, you know, I've often used the phrase when trying to describe what I do at Inroads, I use the term gaming missionary.
Yeah.
And when I use that term, there's always a slight moment of confusion in the faces of the people I'm talking to, because they don't know what that means, because normally I say that in a church context, so they understand what missionary means. And people have a very mm-hmm. distinct understanding of what the word missionary means, usually. But if I was to ask you, Jeff, what the distinction between just a person who plays games and a gaming missionary, what's some of the things that you would think? Like I wrote an article about it. Clearly, I have some thoughts. But I'm curious as to what you would think. Like, what do you think would be the distinctive between just playing and playing as mission?
Well, I have to say, I mean, not to sound melodramatic, but it kind of comes down to the heart. You know, there's a lot of times where the Lord moves you to go and make contact with a certain group of people, whether that's the person next door to me in the cube at work, whether it's going to Indianapolis and connecting with folks there, or whether it's going out to the South Pacific somewhere and connecting with folks there. You know, sometimes the Lord just kind of directs you. You're going to go from Jerusalem out to Samaria, out to the ends of the earth. That's what you're doing. But I mean, there's other times where the Lord puts you into a position that you have no idea that you're there to share the gospel. You're there to share your story, your testimony. And you have no idea it's going to come. But it does. You know, and that could be, oh, I don't know, over Roll 20 playing Pathfinder. Or it could be at your local, friendly local game store. It could be on the plane to Indianapolis. You never know. And it all comes down to a matter of heart. So when I hear, gaming ministry or gaming missionary or just, missionaries, I'm thinking it's a term that covers anybody whose heart is available. Anybody who is saying, you know what, I'm going to look for those situations, whether it's on a conscious level or a subconscious level. But my heart, when it's dedicated upwards, it's going to just start bleeding out to everything else that I do. So everything turns into an opportunity. But kind of the way I was referencing back to the tool belt, something I learned early on in the missions field, going overseas, is that at first I was like, why the heck do you want me to go? And I was thinking, well, it's because my wife speaks the language and, we can go into certain areas that other people couldn't. But it wasn't just that. It was the idea that, hey, Jeff, this is the Lord talking to you. I'm going to get you moving. I'm going to get you up off your butt and you're going to get going. And it was about learning to put my heart in the right place. So, yeah, so long story short, it's the heart. Where's your heart at?
Well, I know for me, the one thing that kind of stuck out, if I was to put it into just one thing, like that straw that, breaks the camel's back, as it were. For me, it's all about intentionality. Because, yeah, you can play games, and I will continue to shout the wonders of games and the power of games. But for me, the difference between somebody who just happens to be a Christian who is playing games, a person who the big thing is saying, I'm going to be here and I'm going to intentionally try and build these relationships. Like it just it's that level of I'm going to do this. I'm going to be here in this moment for this purpose. And I want to be clear, that doesn't mean you're always looking for that thing to twist and say, aha, let me tell you about Jesus. 'Cause,
There's my opening. I'm diving in.
I'm waiting for that moment to pounce. Like that is garbage. That is a load of junk. And
Soon as I hear them utter the phrase, I am searching, and I'm like, I have it here. I'm
I
here.
always when we were in Texas, we used to joke, my buddies and I would joke, because there was a popular evangelism tool that people used, and the first thing was like, always make sure that you're trying to turn the conversation towards spiritual things and their beliefs. And we always joke that like you could do anything, and it's the most gear shifting halt to a conversation when you do that. So we used to like make fun of each other. We'd walk up in the grocery store and be like, "Oh, that's a lovely head of lettuce. Do you have any spiritual beliefs?" Like, because it's just a...
Well, it almost turns into kind of like spiritual name dropping.
Right.
It's like, hey, I know Jesus, do you? It's kind of like, I mean, it can be as simple as that. Don't get me wrong, kids. It can be as simple as that sometimes. But like what we're talking about here, it's like, where's your heart? And then what's your intention?
Yeah.
That's a good combo.
So when it comes to intentionality, I don't mean waiting for the moment to pounce. I just mean intentionally not just being, oh, I'm gonna play some games, we're gonna have some fun, it's gonna be good. It's the intentionality of I'm gonna really just be here for this person. I'm going to try and look for ways that I can grow this relationship. And I think that's what it kicks it into a whole other level. You're not just playing at that point. You're playing with the understanding of that something is being built here. Yeah, I think that's kind of the crux of so much of the way missions actually works. I've talked with a lot of missionaries, and especially in situations where you can't just get on the street corner and preach, but even in places where you can, experientially, the kind of stuff that people tell, the stories that people share with me, always come after long periods of I was just there with the people. They earned the right to give the sermon.
That's right. That's right.
And I don't know, I think that's just as true with games and gaming as it is with anything else. There's a reason why we have the no preaching rule. And that is entirely the fact that we don't want to do a bait and switch. We don't want to, take everything that's happening at the gaming table and make it feel like, haha, we lured you in to get this.
Right. It's not like when you were at your, when we're at TavernCon, right? And you're standing there and you're like, okay, we've hit capacity on the room. Time to lock the doors. I mean, it's not like that's going on. Yeah, a good phrase there, bait and switch. You don't want to do that.
The only time I made any announcements were to tell people that the raffle was going to happen or when food was available. Those were the only times I made any announcements that stopped anyone from playing.
And then there's leftovers. Leave that box over there because that's for me and Sue's.
So, I mean, that's the thing. I'll tell you what, man, I made a ton of really cool. Just I'll just say it. We made a ton of cool friends that night. I mean, obviously there were people there that I knew beforehand because they were local and they just happened to stop by or they were my volunteers. But there were a ton of people that came by and they're like, "Oh, I know you from Twitter. I'm so and so," or, "Hey, I'm from the tavern. It was great." I'm like, "Man, I absolutely love this," and I love the fact that TavernCon wasn't an end point. TavernCon was a beginning. I loved it that there were some people who came from Twitter and were like, "Hey, we're gonna come in and play with you guys." And then, but at the end of the day, I came back. I think it was they came in at the end of the day or that morning. I lose track of that time, the time stretch.
It blurs together.
It all kind of blurred. But within the next day, somebody who came from Twitter is like, "Hey, I want to be part of the tavern." And somebody from the tavern is suddenly following me on Twitter, and all these communities are blurring as these connections are being made, and I love that. I absolutely love that. But that's mission right there. It's
It's and that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, when you first think about going on a missions trip, sometimes like the first thought in your head, like to the uninitiated, which was me, at that time when I first got approached, was like, so like you were saying, Mike, I'm gonna be standing on the corner and yelling at people, or am I gonna be do how do I bring up the conversation? And they said, don't do that. Make friends. Love on them. Show them that you care. And God's gonna take care of the conversation. He's gonna put it on their hearts. Like the phrase goes, my sheep will hear my call. And he's gonna put it on their hearts, and the conversation will come up eventually. Don't force it. And meet them where they're at.
That's exactly the thing that I wanted to stress, because every time I say that, there's at least one person who says, "Oh, well, you didn't actually preach the gospel." I said, "No, I did. I had lots of great conversations with people about Christ. I had lots of great conversations about the ministry and about what it means to be in churches and the hardships and the pluses and the wonderful things and what it's like to be in Christ when you're doing ministry that there's no like guideposts for us right now. We're in a place where the even people even though there are some ministries that are doing similar things to what we're doing, as far as I know, there's nobody doing what we're doing. And so I got to share that with people, being like, it's really cool, but it's also really terrifying to be in a place where there's no one else you can point to say they're doing that, we should do that too, because that's awesome. There's nothing like that. So there are times when we do things and it fails, and sometimes we do things and it's awesome, and we're figuring that out. But I got to share all of that.
And you know what? You could even make it even more basic. Did you shake hands? Did you give hugs? Did you give smiles? Did you help people with food? Did you teach people how to play a game or two? Did you share a laugh or share a cry or whatever? I mean, if you can say yes to at least five of those, then you know what? You shared the love of Christ, because that's what it's about. It's about the relation. It's about the connection. I mean, all of the, I mean, there's love and wrath. Yes, I know there's all of those parts of the Lord, but the most important thing that's out there is love. And if you're doing those basic things to make those connections, it all comes later, it all comes along that journey. So yeah, we are doing something totally new and totally awesome, but if we're following the LOVE, we're good. We're good.
So yeah, I don't know what your mission field's gonna look like. I don't. I sometimes I don't even
Neither do I, brother.
sometimes sometimes I don't even know what mine looks like.
Neither do I. I got a destination basically. I got a time period basically, but what it's gonna end up looking like, I don't know, man. I'm just gonna strap on my tool belt. I wanna pile in some sushi go, and then I'm off.
All right. Well, Jeff, what are some ways that people can get in touch with you?
Well, there's definitely through Facebook on the Tavern. I'm all up in there. Thanks to the wonderful Perna and exposing me to the wonderful things that are on Facebook. There's also inroadsministries.com. You can head over to the contact and hit me up at jeff@inroadsministries.com. I'll put something out there. We're slowly forming the crew for Victoriana for our next En-ROADS plays. In fact, we're going to be doing our last session here coming out for D&D, so we'll be closing that one out and then opening the book on Victoriana.
Oh,
Mr.
wow.
Perna will be playing a Russian bear. So,
Russian bear man, thank you very much.
oh, sorry, Russian bear man. Yes, bear man. Don't forget. I think we've got 3 people with 1 possible maybe, so possibly 4. We may recruit another one, but I threw something out there on En-ROADS or on the Tavern. I thought it'd be kind of cool to get fans of the show or fans of En-ROADS just in general, if we have any artists that are out there that are wanting to maybe kind of showcase their work, that sort of thing. We would love to get some artist rendition of, either characters in the upcoming Victoriana campaign, of scenes or whatever. Anything that would maybe help promote you as an artist, and then also kind of jazz up our presentation as well. So you can get hit up on Facebook, you can get hit up on the En-ROADS site, on YouTube's, on our channel. So yeah, if there's guys or gals out there that are artistically inclined, whereas I draw stick figures, that would be super awesome. Email me again, jeff@enroadsministries.com, or just the contact email as well. Definitely love to hear from you.
All right, now it's my turn.
Your turn,
And
sir.
I'm going to try really hard to get all this in here and not take another 12 minutes to do all this. Okay, so obviously you're going to go to inroadsministries.com because that's where you're going to find links to all of our stuff. You're going to find our YouTube channel, our Instagram, our Facebook, not only our Facebook page, but also the Tavern. You're going to find all that stuff as well as email addresses for all of the board. You're going to find all that on inroadsministries.com. You can also find information about the fact that we are now a 501c3. We are taking donations, and that what your donations will help us do. We kind of have on in the what we do section, we kind of have a little bit of what we hope to see happen in the very near future. You can also find me at Gen Con. By the time this episode goes live, there will be a wow, it'll be a week and a half when this episode goes live. Until Gen Con happens. If you plan on being there, I'm going to be giving stuff away. Here's what I'm going to do. I will have some buttons, and most of them will be for sale. They will be stuff like the En-ROADS Plays logo, our logo, some other stuff going on, the Game Store Profits logo, some stuff like that. But one of them, because my buddy who's doing these buttons for us can do 4 different designs, I wanted to do something fun, and so the fourth one simply says, Dwarf Bards Rock.
Yes, they do.
This is because of Drogon Anvil Song, my particular dwarf in our play-by post. It is also because of the fact that this has become more and more of a thing in my life that I said Dwarf Bards Rock just because I love Drogon, but it became kind of this philosophy for me because dwarf bards are not optimal, and people have no problem telling you that a dwarf bard is not optimal. But a dwarf bard doesn't care if other people think he's optimal.
Dwarf Bard don't care.
Dwarf bard makes himself optimal.
That's right.
So yeah, the dwarf bards. So if you find me at Gen Con, and especially if it's I'm giving you permission, unless I'm one caveat, if I'm playing a game or I'm recording an interview, don't do this to me. But in any other situation, if you see me at Gen Con and you run up and scream the phrase Dwarf Bards Rock, I'm going to give you a button.
Oh yeah. Because right then and there, you're dropping truth bombs.
Yeah,
Plain and simple.
if you find me at Gen Con and And I'll probably like put something out on Twitter the day of too. But if you find me and yell out the phrase "Dwarf Bards Rock," I'll give you a button as long as I have left over.
Yes.
If this becomes a big deal and I run out of those buttons, then sorry, I you know, supplies, you know, limited by supply.
Yeah, if it becomes a thing, you may have to sign those
Yeah, there you go.
and then hand them out so they
And
become collector's items.
if you don't want the one that says Dwarf Bard's Rock, you can just walk up and hand me a dollar and I'll be selling some as well.
That also works.
Again, if you it, I don't know when it's going to go live on their end. I know they're in post-production now, but I don't know when they're going to go up. But if you go to gamerstable.com and if you see an actual play for Shadowrun, if you can the first person to identify which character I'm playing and send that to me in an email, I am going to send you the two stickers that we have, one that's just the Game Store Profits logo and the other one that says God and Gamers. The starter set. I made it look like the old red box for D&D. And I'm also going to give you a TavernCon 2015 magnet, like a refrigerator style magnet. All you have to do is listen to their actual play, identify who I am, and then send the character name. I know that you are, yeah, and send it to me at mike@inroadsministries.com, and I will send that out to you. I think that covers everything.
That's pretty darn close,
Here,
sir.
no, there is one more thing. Of course, there's
Oh.
one more thing, and it's one of the most important things. As of right before we recorded this episode, Jeff and I took to the wonders of the internet and fixed the fact that we weren't previously able to take recurring donations. We had been set up to take individual donations, like one time only, but we couldn't do the recurring donations. And especially in this episode, talking all about missionary work, in order for us to do this, it is hard to budget and make plans and to move forward if we're waiting on, like blast giving, like one big event and here's a large chunk of money. It's hard to plan for that. And I'm not gonna lie, I try to do this with as much humility as possible. Within the next 5 years, we want to have InRoads have staff that like this is what they do. And yeah, that person's going to be me. Eventually, we want it so that this is my job. Right now, planning events and creating designs and making sure stuff happens, this is all stuff that I do late at night. In fact, it is almost 1 in the morning and I still have a lot of work to do. And then I have to go to my day job tomorrow. Stuff like recurring donations help support that maybe someday in the future, God willing, InRoads can be my job. So that I can give you guys more content on the site and provide more events and more training and more traveling and all this cool stuff that you guys are asking me to do. I want to do more of it. I really do. And part of how that happens is if we get recurring donations. You guys have the ability to partner with us as we seek to do this work. There are a number of times in the very recent past at TavernCon, but even in other times when I've talked to people in churches and they go, "That's amazing that you're doing that work. That's awesome. I can't do that. I need people like you to do that kind of work." And just like any other missionary who goes into a field that other people can't go to for one reason or another, we view the gaming community as a mission field, just like anything else. And if you can't go yourself, if you've prayed and you want to support this kind of ministry, but you're not feeling that call to go yourself, I hope that you'll consider supporting us. Even if it's like a dollar a month, every bit helps towards getting it to the place where we can do more of this work and spend less of our time and energy trying to get the funding for it. I've really been pushing on this in the month of July because we just got the 501c3 and we literally started with nothing. And I don't want that to be my job. There will always be an aspect of my job that's that, but I don't want that to be my job, is funding the ministry. I want to spend more time doing this work. And you guys can help that happen. If you click on the donations button on our page, it will take you to. I have a brief little write-up as how you can do it. You can do it through PayPal. If you don't have a PayPal account, that's fine. You can still do it through PayPal without setting up a PayPal account. I hope that you guys would be in prayer and really consider supporting this ministry as we move forward. Quite frankly, I'd love it. Even if you can't support us financially, I'd love if you could pray for us, because like I said, there's a lot of stuff happening. The fact that my short little wrap up has turned into about 7 minutes. There's a lot happening, and it's coming fast and furious, and we really need God to be a part of this. Otherwise it's all going to fall flat. So
Amen.
Definitely be praying. Hopefully I'll see you guys at Gen Con. Hopefully with back-to-back events like this, I won't be too dead tired, and I'll actually be able to say hi and hopefully play some games with you guys. And hopefully I'll be able to come back with an awesome report about that event as well.
Hopefully. Forget about it.
Forget about it. All right, guys. I think there's nothing left but to wrap this up by saying, always remember, God is the game master, and no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.